And welcome back to Cool Science Radio. I'm John Wells. I'm here with Lynn Ware Peak. Our first guest this morning, Richard Brown. He's the Dean of the College of Engineering at the University of Utah, just honored with the Rosenblatt Prize for Excellence, the university's highest faculty accolade. Dean Brown, welcome to Cool Science Radio.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you. First and foremost, congratulations on this very prestigious award.
Thank you. It was a happy surprise to get that award. I appreciate the Rosenblatts for establishing this award that recognizes excellence. That's really what the University of Utah is about.
Ruth Watkins, university president, said that you were internationally respected for your pioneering research and exceptional leadership as dean. She goes on to say, you're also beloved by your students, faculty, and peers, and acclaimed by legislatures and governors of Utah. It's quite a compliment.
Well, Ruth is generous. I appreciate that. I came to the University of Utah in 2004 from the University of Michigan. I got my PhD here from the University of Utah in 1985, and it was a real pleasure to come back.
For our listeners that are not familiar with the College of Engineering, take a minute or two and tell us about your college, how many students, faculty, programs, maybe fields of studies, but tell us anything that you would like people to know about what your College of Engineering does.
That's a pleasure. Of course, the University of Utah was founded in 1850. Excuse me, the first engineering programs were established in the 1890s. And a lot has happened since then. We have had a lot of growth since the year 2000, when Governor Leavitt at that time decided that Utah needed to have a high-tech economy in order to create a lot more high-paying jobs. And at that time, he encouraged us to double and then triple the number of engineers and computer scientists that we graduated. So that was the beginning of what's become known as the Engineering Initiative, which is a legislative program that supported the growth of engineering and computer science in all of the state schools.
That explains a lot, and that's something I didn't know. What we do know and what we talk about a lot on this show when we speak to anyone from the University of Utah is how much that there is a partnership between what you're doing at the university and what you're doing just outside of the university that may be happening in Research Park, for example. It just seems like there's a big partnership between this professional academic this academic institution and the professions that exist just on the outside. Can you talk about that?
That is true. The University of Utah has a great reputation for being entrepreneurial. Since the year 2006, the College of Engineering has spun out 74 startup companies. And last year, there was a report done by the Milken Institute that ranked universities in North America for how good they are at commercialization. And the University of Utah was ranked number one. So the U really is a great place to be entrepreneurial.
And I suppose the breadth that the university gives for those who want to be entrepreneurial, there's something that's sort of special about the way the university either supports it or helps develop that. Is that unusual in an academic setting? You've been in several in your life, and you're very associated with many more, I'm sure.
Most universities are excited about commercialization of research results these days, but many of them have policies that make it very difficult for faculty and students to become entrepreneurs. Monday of this week, I was at the University of Arkansas. They invited me down to talk about the Utah story, how we'd made all of this happen. And when I learned about some of the policies that they have, I told them, you'll never be very successful until you change some of these policies and even state law. But the University of Utah is not only willing to tolerate commercialization, it actually encourages it. A big change happened when Michael Young was president here, and he had a mantra of the University of Utah is an economic engine for the state. And there's a lot of evidence that shows it has a very positive impact on the economy.
Dean Brown, since you have come in 2004, research dollars have increased from $30 million to $82 million. Research-reviewed publications have gone from 398 to 883 per year. The number of graduates has more than doubled, and the number of freshmen coming into the college engineering has grown from 7 to 20% of the U's total freshman class. How many students do you currently have in the College of Engineering? What degree programs do you offer? And tell us a little bit about your faculty.
Yeah, that's pretty exciting, isn't it?
It's been a great run here.
We have 5,500 students now in engineering. I guess the thing I'm most excited about is that 635 of those are PhD students. They're doing the research that results in technologies coming out of the university. And they're the people who have the education that makes them most likely to have the biggest impact on the economy. But of course, our technology economy requires a lot of other engineers. So this past year, for the first time, we graduated more than 1,000 students total. That's a milestone for
right.
us. I don't know how many students we graduated this spring. It takes a few months for us to figure out who actually met all of the requirements
right.
and graduated. But there is every reason to believe that that number will continue to grow. As you mentioned, now 1 in 5 of the freshmen coming to the University of Utah is coming into the College of Engineering, as opposed to 1 in 14 when I came in 2004.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and to grow these types of numbers, you must be doing something to communicate and start a relationship with kids that are in high school and maybe even going back to elementary school. What sort of things does your group do, to start that relationship?
We have a wonderful academics group that does outreach with students K through 12. They have about 40,000 face-to-face interactions with students every year. We have a wide variety of programs from summer camps that have more than 1,000 high school students in them to elementary engineering, which brings 2,500 fifth and sixth grade students onto campus after they've spent several months preparing. Those students build trebuchets, they build little fish that swim in tanks, and they compete with each other. I think competition is a wonderful thing in general.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of the magic of the American society as we have competition. We think it's a good thing. These students compete, and there are many other competitions. For example, FIRST Robotics, which the University of Utah started the regional FIRST Robotics competition here. Robotics has drawn a lot of students into engineering. And again, they're building robots and competing with each other. So it's the same kind of excitement that one gets in athletic competition.
If you're just joining us, our guest is Richard Brown. He's the Dean of the College of Engineering at the University of Utah. And John, I don't know how it was for you, but when I was in college, even in graduate school, my professors, I felt, well, I was intimidated by them, and they were on this other level, and I never really interacted with them. And yet you, Dean Brown, are not only put yourself on the same level with your students in that you start businesses with them. And so not only are you supporting their growth and teaching them, you are collaborating with your students. You've started 4 businesses, commercial endeavors, startups with your students.
That's right. One of the privileges one has as an academic is to become entrepreneurial if you choose to do so. And the natural progression is that a faculty member writes proposals, typically to federal funding agencies, hires bright students, does the research, and along the way, some inventions come out, which are disclosed to the university and then patented. And at some point, one might decide that there's enough here to start a company. And it's true that in each of the companies I've been involved in founding, it's involved my PhD students and postdocs.
Yeah, incredible. So let's talk about some of those companies. They all, well, I think at least a couple of them surround chemical sensing. And this is what you said you did your PhD in. So one of those is sensing chemicals for potable water, creating better water. That's one. And then another one has to do with a glucometer. Glucometer. Did I say that right?
That's right.
Testing glucose.
Let me start with that one. That company's name is iSense. It is located in Korea. And we make glucometers. Last year, we sold 1.7 million glucometers and 1.4 billion test strips that are single use with the glucometers. We also make some other bedside testing equipment. You know, in the old days in a hospital, someone would take a blood sample, they'd send it down to the lab, and tomorrow morning you'd know what your condition was. Now we make this equipment that sits right in the patient's room. You take a blood sample, and in a few minutes you know all the blood electrolytes and blood gases. So that's iSense. The founders of that company were also involved with my current startup, which is in Research Park next to the university in Salt Lake City, and it's called eSense, and it is focused, as you mentioned, on testing drinking water. So we have a little handheld unit. It's about 4 inches wide, 14 inches long, and a couple of inches tall. You put a few milliliters of water into it, and in 5 minutes, it reads out 20 parameters of clean water. So it will be used by water utilities that treat and distribute water, and will make it much easier to test water and to manage the system.
Will the university be able to continue to have ownership of these companies if they were to maybe be acquired or go public, that sort of thing?
The university typically either takes some small equity in the company or gets royalties. So the university does benefit when companies are successful. A couple of good examples of that are Myriad Genetics, which was founded, co-founded by one of our alumni, Pete Meldrum, who is a chemical engineer. That company paid a large amount of royalty to the University of Utah. You may remember it commercialized the BRCA1 and BRCA2 tests for genetic predisposition to cancers. It has a number of other similar tests now for various types of cancer. Another example is BioFire, which was sold a couple of years ago for $450 million. I don't know what percentage of that was owned by the university, but I know it was a good day for the university.
Yeah. I want to go back to something that you you spoke about earlier, and that's the competitive juices that run in some of these robotics competitions. I experienced that firsthand. That would be hard for me to believe unless I did experience it firsthand, because I played sports and I know, you know, the excitement, the competition, all the different dynamics, all the different moving pieces that go into that. And when I went to a couple of robotics competitions here in Park City and I interviewed kids, I mean, first of all, there's a tremendous amount of excitement in the gymnasium and the team spirit. I mean, these kids were really jazzed about everything that was going on. And every single kid that I interviewed told me the same thing. I asked them, are you involved in STEM-related courseware? And they said, yeah, I am. I'm in engineering, I'm in mechanical engineering, or I'm in mathematics, whatever. And I said, what got you interested in that? And every single one of them said it was the robotics competitions. Maybe it started with Lego, maybe it started with FIRST, but as it went up, and Probably now is a good a time as any. We've been following the Park City robotics program, and of course specifically the RoboMiners. And I wanted to mention they did compete in the World Championship in Houston a couple weeks ago. It was a 4-day event. Teams all over the world, including Canada, Mexico, Lebanon, Israel, New Zealand, Australia, and China. The RoboMiners finished in the top 25, which puts them in the top 1% in the world because there are 5,200 teams competing worldwide. So congratulations to the RoboMiners. Congratulations to everybody involved in FIRST Robotics here in Park City.
That's right. Wow. That's incredible. And to a certain degree, the work that you're doing at the University of Utah has helped fostering this involvement in robotics.
That's true. As I mentioned, faculty members in our mechanical engineering department were the ones who established the regional FIRST Robotics competition. But we've done some other things as well. Stacy FIRST developed for us a high school engineering course, which was taught first at Olympus High and now has moved out to about a dozen different school districts. And in that course, students become acquainted with the various disciplines in engineering and get to do projects ranging from computer science to chemical engineering to electrical or whatever. Mm-hmm. And that's a great way for students to become familiar with the opportunities that they have.
You know, just it wasn't much more than a handful of years ago that we didn't have robotics programs in our primary and secondary schools. And I'm wondering, I'm sure when they began, they were very, very simple projects just to see what the kids could handle. And I'm sure it's evolved over, about 10 years is all they've been doing it?
I'd say maybe 15 years since FIRST Robotics started, and it has had a huge impact on drawing students into engineering. There are other forces as well. I think that it's become well known that engineering and computer science jobs are well paid, that there's demand. The question isn't how many of our students have job offers when they graduate. It's how many job offers on average do they have. And so students and parents are aware of this, and it's drawing students into engineering.
So one of the questions I wanted to ask you is the Bachelor of Science graduates who get Utah engineering jobs is currently at 84%. So that doesn't count folks that get jobs outside of the state of Utah. But just looking at that 84%, how does that compare to engineering programs across the country?
That is an amazingly high number. I'll tell you why we started looking at that. A state senator once asked me, and he said, you know, Rich, this engineering initiative program is a huge success. You've done everything you said you were going to do. But you have to tell me, are we just underwriting the California economy? So we went back and checked to see where our graduates were working. And as Utah's technology economy has grown, there is such demand here for our graduates. And many of our graduates from the U want to stay in the state, including those who come here from other states. So we looked at the numbers that 84% is graduates from the last 5 years. And it is a phenomenally high number. I was at the University of Michigan before I came here, and I bet we didn't keep 20% of our graduates. They all left the state. But here, 84%. And actually, I got some numbers recently from the Career Center, and they claim it's even higher than that. But it's a phenomenally high number.
Well, it's a brave new world. AI, predictive analysis, all sorts of technology that is going to be self-learning. What is the future for the College of Engineering as far as programs? What are your thoughts on some of these technologies as they roll along closer to us?
Well, it is an exciting world. You know, when I think back to when I started as an engineer, it was in the years when I was an undergraduate that the first microprocessor was designed. And now there's more compute power in my watch than there was in supercomputers of that day. AI is finally really having an impact, self-driving cars. Things just seem to move faster and faster. It's hard to predict what life will be like 10 years from now. But one thing you can be sure of is that technology will make life better. You know, we used to say as we were trying to recruit students into engineering that if you're good in math and science, you should think about coming into engineering and computer science. Now we have a much better message, which is if you want to make the world a better place, if you want to improve the quality of life, come into engineering, yeah. Because there's a great opportunity to have a positive impact.
I think one of the challenges with these technologies that are coming along is what the adoption rates will be here in the world, as far as people. I mean, when the electric light bulb came out, it took 25 years or 20 years to get to an adoption rate of maybe 25%, 30%. And these new technologies, if you look at the smartphone, if you look at, I mean, starting with DVRs or back in those days, the recording devices, and then you look at smartphones, I mean, it does not take long to get to that percentage.
You're right. Another interesting thing about some of these technologies is that they have really improved life for people on the lower end of the economic spectrum. For example, if you look in Africa or China, there is no wired phone system going in. It's all wireless because it's so much less expensive and faster to implement. So people who had very little communication now have cell phones.
Yeah. You know, there's so much of a movement to get young girls into STEM programs, and I'm wondering how successful we have been. In other words, what is the gender makeup of the students in the engineering program, both undergraduate and graduate? Do you have those numbers?
I do for the University of Utah.
Mm-hmm. Actually, that's what I was referring
to. Yeah. Nationwide, the story in computer science is a bit depressing. There was a higher percentage of women in computer science in the 1970s than there is now. But at the University of Utah, we have made significant progress. Again, I have the numbers for the time that I've been at the U, which is from 2004. At that point, we had 11% of our freshman class were women. It's now 25%. We had, at that time, 11% minority students. That has increased to 38%. So we've made significant progress. And a question people always ask me is, since you've grown the number of students so much, have you been able to maintain the standards or have you had to relax the standards? In fact, the average ACT scores for our students have gone up several full points over that period of time. We now do direct admission to the College of Engineering, and our average high school GPA is 3.9, and the average ACT is 31 for the direct admit students.
Wow. What does direct admission mean?
That means when we admit a student, we tell them, you are an engineering student. You can graduate in engineering. At a lot of schools around the country, many more students try to go into engineering than actually can be accommodated in the program. I serve on the visiting committee for the University of Washington, for example. 40% of the students that go to the University of Washington to graduate in engineering actually get to major in engineering. So these direct admit students, we are telling them, you can graduate in engineering.
Great.
Wow. Well, we want to thank you so much for joining us this morning, Dean Richard Brown. He was just honored with the Rosenblatt Prize for Excellent, the U's highest faculty accolade. I'd also like to mention that Dean Brown has been elected a Life Fellow in the IEEE, which is a big distinction. He's a Fellow of the National Academy of Inventors, has received numerous other awards, including the Governor's Medal for Excellence in Science and Technology. It's great having your college down the hill, and congratulations again.
A lot to be proud of.
Thank you very much, John and Lynn. Pleasure to be with you.
Yeah, we'll have you back, that's for sure.
That's right. I want to hear about the materials science in the engineering department. I want to hear about a lot of this stuff you've got. Yeah. So thanks so much for joining
Thank
us.
You.